I was told this morning that moderators should be seen and not heard. If this podium was any higher, I'd be heard and not seen. But, I think Don Lipsett picked this one up. The topic to which this panel will address itself is the state of the conservative movement. I wish a better term than movement had been chosen, in light of what liberals usually characterize the pronouncements which issue from the bowels of conservatism's discontent. Nevertheless, its use will mark our courage, if not our wisdom. The lineup of participants this morning, I think, is superb. I, at least in one respect, I don't know who made the determination, but Herberg, Meyer, Paolucci, and Milioni. And I think this should put the, what was that, Frank?
I said the last shall be first.
Oh, no. I think this should at least put the lie to those who frequently claim that this is a waspish cult. It also has its disadvantages, though, because they might say that it's a fascist movement run by Jews under the guidance of the Castle Irish, the Buckleys. The session promises to be one of the best of the entire meeting, and I plan to intrude as little as possible on the time allotted the panelists. I would, however, like to make a brief observation. Conservatism as a movement has grown tremendously in numbers and influence in the past two decades. There are a substantial number of people here. ISI is having a seminar today at the Genealogical and Biographical Society on the foundations of Western civilization. We expect over 200 students there. The Conservative Party in New York had a meeting last night, and substantial numbers turned out there. The fact remains, however, that the ideals and the truths that embody the civilization which we seek to conserve have undergone a serious decline in prestige in the same period. Whatever the state of the conservative movement may prove to be as a result of this morning's discussions, we should keep in mind that the movement is not an end in itself. Also, we should maintain a balanced perspective concerning the future, neither succumbing to a pagan federalism nor a Rotarian optimism. And I think we should begin. We'd like to have as much time as possible for questions. The first speaker this morning is Dr. Henry Paolucci. Dr. Paolucci is a native New Yorker who received his PhD from Columbia University, professor of political science in the Graduate School of St. John's University, New York. He's a traveling fellow in Columbia University, a Fulbright scholar, and has taught at the City College of New York, Brooklyn, and Iona colleges. Professor Paolucci has published studies of political thought of St. Augustine, Machiavelli, Beccaria, and Hegel. His most recent book is War, Peace, and the Presidency. 1964, Professor Paolucci ran on the Conservative Party ticket for the U.S., a U.S. Senator from New York against Robert F. Kennedy and Kenneth Keating. So bringing together theory and practice. He now serves as the state vice chairman of the Conservative Party. He is a director of the Walter Badgett Research Council of National Sovereignty. He's been a regular contributor, correspondent for the Italian political weekly, Il Borghese, Run. Dr. Paolucci.
I learned that I'd be the first speaker only a few moments ago, and having assumed I'd be the third, and that some great sweeping statements would have been made about the state of the conservative movement. But inasmuch as my theme is that we need to be flexible, I'll adapt my discourse to the change. My remarks are based primarily on a piece of paper that I put out called State of the Nation, and the title of the present issue is Conservative Liberation Front, because I think a CLF is necessary for not to collapse into utter political paralysis. I think those of you who recall what it was like in the spring and summer of 1968 know that there was a tidal wave of conservatism that really frightened the liberal establishment. Bill Buckley last night reminded us what the plank was of the Democratic Party framed in Chicago. It was a tough plank about Vietnam, and there were tough planks on law and order. The Republican Party, it was assumed, had a man of indelible conservatism as its nominee, so to speak. I meant the Republican Party nationally, and there was a third candidate whose supporters knew they were merely protesting the state of affairs in America. They represented a great number of people, estimated to be 20 million at the start of the movement, with the understanding that perhaps half of them would desert Wallace because they wouldn't want to waste their vote, and that those votes would be distributed between the other two candidates, provided they made a direct appeal to them. The estimate of men like Joe Alsop was that 85% of the American people felt that they were conservatives in basic ideology. Now, that doesn't mean that they knew what it is. As you know, who knows what conservatism is? A book edited by Frank Meyer many years ago began and ended with everything in doubt about it, because what conservatives want to preserve requires the writing of the history of the United States. It's a very complex matter to state when you want to defend 1,000 values, 200,000 values, how difficult a thing it is to say. Now, one of the great values that conservatives want to defend, unfortunately, is the American tradition, which is essentially a liberal tradition. And that's our great tragedy. It's been said many times, we want to preserve what the American liberal is weary of and wants to give up. And that's the theme, as you know, of James Burnham's superb book, Suicide of the West. We want to have programs where an interviewer gives you both sides, where if he's interviewing Jesse Jackson, Jesse Jackson gets at least 50% of the right in the program. Now, there's only one program on TV that I know of like that, that's straight down the middle. It's not on the right. It's straight down the middle, and that's the firing line of Bill Buckley. It's the perfect liberal tradition. But the people who insist that they are liberals in the core say, don't you tell us what's liberal. We'll tell you what's liberal. What's liberal is to commit suicide now. We don't believe in Christ, but we're going to commit a Christ-like sacrifice of ourselves so that the blacks in our nurseries, can be advanced, and all the other people around the world who have suffered and who are backward can be advanced. We're going to die so that they may live. It sounds very nice, but as Father Andrew Greeley observed in his answer to Galbraith, when Galbraith wrote his piece for the New York Times saying that he was going to open up the executive suite of big business to the blacks and the Puerto Ricans and other deprived minorities, he said, I know Galbraith can only do one thing at a time, but I hope after he finishes doing that, he'll start opening up the universities where there is an absolute monopoly in the elite schools of WASPs and Jews. What he means by WASPs and Jews means WASP-like Jews and Jewish-style WASPs, as you know, right? I mentioned this matter since our panel chairman brought it up, Here we are assembled, the white ethnics here, as they call us, and the Jew who doesn't somehow qualify as a white ethnic in the liberal hierarchy of values in our country. It's a difficult problem here. But what has happened is that this liberal establishment now really got beaten in 1968. It was absolutely desperate, and it pulled the ancient tactic. When you know that your enemy's got a weakness, and the weakness is that he really likes what you are, when you know that the intellectual enemy, when the intellectual conservative really likes what you are, you know that all you have to do is get yourself attacked further from the left, and he'll leap to your defense. So they sent their goon squads out to urinate all over the campuses and defecate and put turds in the desks of the presidents of Columbia University, and then they called to us, the intellectuals on the right, and said, defend us against the enemy. This was our original confrontation. Here's the liberal intellectual, here's the conservative intellectual. He's beaten. 85% of the people are against him. So he sends his goon squads out to the left and turns around. And then he says to us, here's the front line, cowards. Why don't you come and defend Columbia University, Harvard University, Princeton University? Defend the institutions that for 40 years have been wrecking the country. And what have we done? We've rushed. Some of my dear friends, perhaps Charles Moser is here, rally to form organizations that will defend the university. Because many of us did love those universities. I've always said Columbia will survive the crap that's been there, if you allow me to say so. I know how many men there secretly want to get rid of their Wolfs and the Marcuse types. The young ones are worse than the old ones always because they can gain by their aggressiveness, since they have men who favor that kind of thing up high. So we came out to defend those very universities. That's the phenomenon, the elite university. In the Jewish community, it's quite the same thing. A man like Nathan Glazer, who qualifies, in my estimation, as a first-ranking liberal, has said the great tragedy of the American Jewish intellectual now is the great force that the Jew has supplied on the extreme left. That's too much. He cited in a recent article in Commentary, as you probably know, the fact that 3 out of 4 students, this is used to be done only by Statecraft and other anti-Semitic publications, but he said 3 out of 4 students at Kent were Jewish when random shots were fired into a crowd of rioting students. Now, that's too large a percentage, is what Nathan Glazer has said. You know, that's his style. We've got too many Jewish women in the women's lib movement. We've got too many Jews in this radical thing, too. And he said, we've got to pull them back from there into the middle. But then he said, we must not build up the right with Jews, because there are redeeming features on the left. It's rarely anti-Semitic, and the only anti-Semites on the left now are Jews who have to prove that they're really for the Third World and the Black Panthers, so they pretend to be anti-Semites or anti-Zionists, you know, like that. But he said there are no redeeming qualities on the right. Now, I'd like to inform you of why I'm on the right. I'm for the center, like Bill Buckley. I'm for the center. But when a ship is careening to the left, you don't straighten it up by setting your compass straight ahead. Someone has got to lean over to the right. If reasonable men won't do it, then unreasonable people will do it. But that force is there. As one of the members of this audience says, it's a gusher. The right-wing fervor in our country is a gusher, powerful as anything. But what it requires is intellectuals who will not desert it when it seems fierce. But our liberal intelligentsia knows that that's our weakness. We want to be fair. We want to preserve the liberal tradition, and so we agree to defend the liberal establishment's place, both from the left and from the right. And so Bill Buckley's magazine will devote 12 pages to unmasking a man who I know Bill Buckley regards as the author of drivel, because he happens to be on the right and has said some unpleasant things. 12 whole pages at a time when our national security is collapsing. And the name of Nixon is rarely pronounced as the author of that collapse, even though he's been the commander-in-chief for 2.5 years. This is not some act of nature that is disarming us. This is not some anonymous force working. This is a president of the United States who in himself is trying to embody that liberal middle that all of us conservatives have such a penchant to defend. We don't like what he's doing, but good heavens, all he's done is hired another man from the Harvard MIT complex to guide our national security, a disciple of McGeorge Bundy, and why not? We know that it's reasonable still to say that America should guide the world like a beacon light, not with coercion. That's a very ancient concept, H.G. Wells, Bertrand Russell. You know why England is great? Well, once upon a time, it was William the Conqueror, William the Bastard, who crushed everybody and gave us unity in 1066, which the French didn't get till Napoleon. Well, but that's past. And we've had great industrialists. We had the merchant adventurers who said, if you sell unmanufactured goods to the continent, we slit your throat and you give us your consent in advance. Tough industrial complex. And then we've had tough soldiers, a tough military industrial complex. But now I think, says H.G. Wells, words will triumph. And Bertrand Russell says spinning cobwebs will triumph. And we've got to get rid of the industrial military complex. I believe that now the whole world will accept Anglo-Saxon guidance just on words. And John Dewey said the same thing here. And they've tried, as the great Pareto said, to get rid of the lions. It's up to foxes now. And guess who frustrates the foxes most? The lion's on his own side, because that scares the enemy, makes him envious and fearful. So the worst enemy of the foxy schemes to have American liberal intelligentsia run an empire around the world are the tough Americans. Now, I say, the time is fast approaching when we on the right have got to unite all the forces on our right. That means we've got to ask less and less and less. And we do that by reordering, as James Buckley said last night, of the reordered priorities. We've had a reordering of priorities, and now we have to reorder that reordering. And let's just ask this. Let us not embarrass a working man by saying, you can't be a conservative unless you make believe you own the factory. You want to be a conservative? Make believe that your main interest is how the factory ought to be run and what inducements will make it run better. And you mustn't say to a tenant, make believe you're the landlord. That's unfair to a tremendous number of Americans. It is. I've heard people who are in the industrial class defend the industrial system. And I say, if labor says in America, I love the country, but I will not vote even for Bill Buckley, if he says that he's against the things that I want, I think Bill Buckley ought to listen to those people a little bit. Because otherwise, we'll end up being a trifling group of people that will talk to one another, and what we'll be talking about is the defense of the liberal tradition, which tradition is committing suicide right in front of us. We have got to forget about preserving it the way it is now. We've got first to preserve the nation and not its liberal tradition. And then, rest assured, once that's done, if the right wing thinks it's going to do something else, it will find me in absolute opposition. Thank you.